And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Hi there, everybody out there. This is Stan Weisleder at The View from Over Here. And Marilyn, you're still home. Don't forget to take the dog out, okay? Here in the studio with me today is Malcolm Berman, our producer, Jeff and Jerry Cutler, who are going to give us some amazing movie reviews. And we have a special guest today, Deborah Manning, who is going to talk about how you can restart or jumpstart your life after age 55.
Oh, welcome, Debbie.
You got it.
Malcolm, you look happy today. How are you feeling?
Happy.
Happy, good. Jerry, Jeff, how are you guys today?
We're fine.
We're okay. It's lucky we're still talking after our ride here.
Uh-oh. How is the trip here?
Well, if Jerry would just sit back and be quiet, we'd be fine. I drive.
She drives with a cup of coffee in one hand and staring with the other because she must have a coffee.
And a lipstick between my toes.
Wow.
And if she has to make a short, which she did, she stopped short, so the coffee went flying on my jacket, beautiful jacket.
I think I've seen the movie.
Yeah, well.
Hey, Jeff, you were mentioning we just got an email from Sydney, Australia.
Yeah.
Did you know that the country is now on fire?
I do.
56 fires going on simultaneously, and 12 of them out of control.
Yeah, and my friend lives in Sydney, and she was telling me that both areas, there's the Blue Mountains and Southern Highlands, and they're very populated and a lot of bushland. So with the they do get fires, like we get fires here in California, but the weather has been really hot and dry.
Yeah, but they showed a satellite view, and the entire continent seems to be in flames.
Yeah, well, that's a huge continent.
Well, Stan, not to bring up our old show, but you see it goes back to what Phil said. All the bushlands.
Let's not go there.
Anyway, but they're making the best of it, and a lot of people live in that area, and they travel back and forth to Sydney.
Do they text while driving?
I don't know. I hope not.
Well, there's a report.
Oh, the cup of coffee.
A cup of coffee. Okay. Well, that's not exactly texting, but there's a report out there that there are a lot of guys that saying because they drive better than the females, therefore they can text while driving. To me, they just sound like a bunch of macho yuppies, and they don't realize that studies show that texting is more dangerous than alcohol if you're driving.
You're absolutely right. I think texting is very dangerous. And you know what? I've got to admit, I tend to be guilty. I try not to, but I do that. But I will agree, I'm a really, really good driver. I'm really good.
Of course. Therefore, you have the you can text because you're
excuse me, Jerry, do you agree with
Wait,
that?
Wait, no. Can I finish
this? Okay, finish it.
And I think women, for the most part, are terrible drivers. They just don't take a chance. They don't, you know, they or if they do, they're not looking. And I like to get in there and mesh with the men. So I think men are better drivers. What do you think, Jerry?
Okay, Jerry, your turn.
Men are better drivers. Do you know, in California, I find that people love lines with cars. If you see there are two lanes to go make a left turn at some street, one lane will have about 40 cars and about three on the other. Those three, you know, are from New York or the East Coast somewhere. The California, they love lines. They get in the line. They don't know why they're there, but they get in the line.
So you just go around it. You go... Okay,
yeah,
I got it.
Yeah, it's an amazing phenomenon out here in California.
I do the same thing.
That was the hardest thing when I came from New York. You see, especially sometimes during rush hour where there's no parking in the right lane, and nobody's in the right lane.
And
there's no parking after 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And you go there, and occasionally you find someone that's parked there, so you just cut out in the lane and you
right,
go around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I've noticed the change from East to West Coast is that on the West Coast in California, anyway, most drivers they're considerate of people crossing in the crosswalk. In New York City, you take your life in your hands if you're crossing even with a green light, and they want it go. You are in trouble.
Well, first of all, that's not true anymore in Los Angeles, because there are now studies where there are more people hit and run,
yeah,
and being hit in the crosswalks or being hit, while crossing the street.
I think pedestrians take it for granted they have the right of way, and they're not there.
Well, the one that I think I love is the fact that you have a mother who is now pushing a baby carriage with the baby in front and now attempting to cross. So if someone gets hit, it's the baby first and then the mother second. I don't understand.
And speaking on a cell phone or texting.
Yeah, absolutely. What, the baby, the mom, and then the driver. Absolutely. Yeah.
And a lady pushing a carriage is a bigger target, easier to hit. Can't miss it.
Yeah, 25 points. So.
But I find a woman, I found this a few times, and I scream out the window with them. They walk with their little toddler behind them. They assume the toddler will follow them across the crosswalk. Now, you hold the hand of a toddler if you're going across on a crosswalk. Do not leave the child alone.
Maybe it was intentional.
It's a lack of sensibility. My wife would do that intentionally.
Yeah, but you're a toddler, 30 years old now.
Yes.
In fact, there was something on TV this morning with the news. They think they found this 3-year-old girl missing for a number of years.
Yeah.
And the so-called parents that had her, they did a DNA test, and they determined immediately that they are not the parents.
So, well, and what did she do? Give birth to like 6 kids within the last 10 months?
I saw that on the news, but it was obvious because the parents were, I think, Roms or gypsies.
Yeah, they're gypsies. Yeah.
And you saw them, and both of them were dark hair, dark complexion.
The kid was light skin with blonde hair.
Blonde hair, blue eyes.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, it's a genetic anomaly.
Right. Well, I saw that. I think we were talking about there was a documentary on HBO about progenie. And this is a disease where children look like they're, 70, 80 years old when they're actually, 4 or 5, 6 years old. And there's only, I think there was 250 people afflicted with this.
Oh, Brad Pitt did the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's you speak to the,
well,
the kids speak on.
The movie that he did was different than this one. Right. This one, they just get older. They start from birth and they just get older. And they still have the mind of a child, but by 12 or so, they're dead.
Yeah.
Physiologically, they look like they're old people. Mentally. They're like 11, 12 years old, whatever their age is, and you hear them speak, and it's, like if you close your eyes, you think you're talking to, 11, 12 year old.
And there's no cure in sight.
No. Well, they had the parents of this child. Both of them were doctors, and they've been, since he was born, they've been working on it, and they did discover a genetic cause. And they're doing experiments on it now.
Well, hopefully they'll get the money, because if they're only 25. They'll say, hey, the money should go to those people, and the numbers who are affected with
250. I think I said.
So a program like that would almost prove that there is a genetic key to be able to turn back time.
Yeah, this particular.
Well, they know that there are genetic reasons for people getting older. There are genes in the body that say this particular item or this particular thing that you have will age quicker than something else. Or less quicker, or quicker, or faster, or slower. Mm-hmm. So there are genes that will cause you to age quicker or slower.
It's not necessarily genes, because when I married my wife, I became older so fast.
He certainly did.
Ain't love wonderful? It's so sweet seeing you two lovebirds.
I think one day, Stan, we're going to have to get the story of how Jerry and Jeff met. And maybe we can turn it into a film.
We could do we'd do a whole program on it.
It'd be a thriller.
A thriller or a comedy.
I will only tell you this. We hated each other for the first year we worked together.
Were you married at the time?
No.
Oh.
No. Well, he was married to someone else.
The truth is coming out here.
Uh-oh.
Is that the thriller part or the comedy part?
And I thought they suited each other. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
No.
Sorry,
have you talked about that before? Or
yeah, we have.
Anyway, Stan, what else do you have
written?
Speaking
of news, I read an item in the Wall Street Journal, of all places, about a violin that was they took it up from the sunken Titanic. So the ship went down 100 years or so ago, and one of the artifacts they brought up was a violin.
Yep.
So, and it went for $1.44 million at an auction. You know, that's a lot of fiddling around for an old fiddle that you can't even play. You can't even use the thing.
Well, how do they know it actually came from the Titanic?
They brought it up.
By the
they brought up a number of different artifacts.
Oh, those who, I see. But wasn't, didn't just surface to the...
No. It was down in the hold someplace.
Right.
It was in somebody's closet or stateroom.
Actually, the violinist had strapped it to himself. He was the violinist who played throughout the Titanic.
He was the band leader, and his fiancé had given him the violin before he left on the trip, and there was... on the violin, it was dedicated. You know,
yes,
say
it
to
was.
my I forget what his name was, Stanley something or other.
Weisleiter?
No,
that was my great 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 grandfather.
Anyway, he strapped it around him as they went down. Now that's a beautiful love story.
Did they bring him back up also?
They did.
It would be a skeleton, wouldn't it? Only by this time.
The romantic story is
he was still alive.
Right.
Well, I mean, by that time the fish have gotten to you and everything.
But the romantic story was that as the boat was sinking,
they were playing.
By the way, you guys reviewed the other week Captain Phillips.
Yes.
Went to see it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very tense, very exciting. Even though you know the story, it's still something to watch
it
played out.
It does, it captures you, doesn't it? Did you get that whole rah-rah USA?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was nice to see the U.S. do something positive.
Yes.
After all of the negative publicity that we get.
And for one American, that's what made it so special.
Yes.
Well, that bothers me in that man, that captain has cost us, or actually Maersk, the shipping line. What does it cost us taxpayers to do that? Because it's a business of the ship going back and forth.
Yeah, but the number of piracies has decreased very, very significantly from that, and also they now have some specialists, so-called specialists, or people that know how to handle weapons on some of these ships. And if anybody approaches, shoot now and ask questions later.
Jeff doesn't have a high value on human life. Look at me.
Okay. I'm looking.
And that's why.
She treats me like, okay, you're going to be out of here. But I refuse to leave.
This is true.
Well, good for you.
well, you know, traditionally, women have lived longer than men.
Yeah.
So most likely...
About 4 to 5 years.
Yeah. So most likely, she would be doing the eulogy on you versus vice versa.
No, I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen.
Are you going to put it on tape and video it?
Do you know, I read statistic that women do live longer. For years, I had the most beautiful little black Chanel suit hanging in the closet just
for the occasion.
I was going to be ready. I have now outgrown that one and several others.
Okay,
buy another one.
Yeah, okay, giving her the satisfaction.
By the way, what movie are you going to be reviewing?
Torn.
Torn, and that's with?
That's
John
with
Hurd.
Manoor Baloch and Dendry Taylor, two rising stars.
Easy for you to say.
Manoor Baloch was, she was a model in Pakistan. She's very beautiful.
Oh, she's lovely.
Yeah.
She's absolutely
And who directed it?
A guy named Birnbaum, I think.
Yes.
Birnbaum. Anyway, guys, we have 30 seconds
time?
Left.
Okay. We are listening to The View from Over Here.
On
CRNTalk.com.
And we'll be back
in 5 minutes.
Or maybe less.
Or less, depending on Malcolm's pointing to the guy in the control room. Hi there, Stan Weisleder here. Welcome back to The View from Over Here. I'm here with Malcolm, our special guest, Deborah, And Jerry and Jeff, who are going to review a brand new movie for us.
1 minute, Stan. Where can they hear us?
Where? You know where.
CRNTalk.com. And what's our telephone number?
336-8225. With an 800 before that.
800-336-2225 if you care to call up to interrupt. Take it away, Jeff and Jerry.
Torn was directed by a guy named Jeremiah Birnbaum.
Birnbaum.
Is he in your congregation?
No, but he will be because I like the film. The film is it's happening today. It's a very current type of film. It's about two kids who are killed in a shopping center blast.
Well, actually, I wouldn't say it's about the two kids. I would say it's about the families, the mothers especially, of the two kids that were killed in the blast.
Their reaction to the two kids.
That were killed in the shopping.
Yes, and if it wasn't for the two kids, there'd be no film and no reaction by the mothers. One kid is Pakistani, and the other is a Caucasian kid, a regular Caucasian kid from
a blue-collar family.
Interestingly, the mother works as a janitor.
At night.
And the other family, Pakistani, live in a two-story home, and the father works, the mother works. She's a real estate agent. They do quite well.
Well, where does it take place?
In San Francisco.
San Francisco?
Yeah, well, that's right, San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And after the blast, the two women meet each other, and they, of course, there's great sympathy passing between the two of them, until it is discovered that the Pakistani kid would visit a mosque, and he was getting very immersed in the Muslim culture.
They're into
the extremist culture, and right away he becomes the one who is most
suspect.
The prime suspect. And as things turn, then the other kid becomes the suspect because he hated his classmates. They would bully him, and he went to the mall with his classmates. So now we don't know who was set off the bomb. Now that the friction now arises between the mothers who had become friends because the two of them had suffered the same fate, and now one accuses the other of being the mother of the son who committed this heinous act.
It was shot for under $500,000, which is amazing today. So it's a small film. It's not going to be a huge film, but it was well done. It might be a little bit better than a TV movie.
It was a lot better than a TV movie.
Yeah, you didn't have commercials interrupting.
No, not only that. You know what? These guys, it could have become very maudlin, and it could have become very heavy-handed. It wasn't. It was very emotional, and Birnbaum did a wonderful, wonderful job in reining in the actors. The actors were sensational. It was everyone was such a fine actor, except one maybe, but we'll forget about her. But the principals were outstanding. And the film is today. It mirrors today because we are suspect. How easily we become suspect of another, especially if they're a different color or a different race, religion. This is happening more and more post 9/11. And sadly, this captures that mood and also the reactions of the various people.
Do you want to give away the ending?
No.
Okay. No, there's a caveat at the end, which, you know, is important.
But did they trace the actions of the two individuals like they did with the bombers at the Boston Massacre, where they see them coming in and everything is on
track? It's not about them, no. And Jeff is right. It's about the mothers and their relationship and their reactions. When the kid goes into the police station, John Hurd, who's the only one that I knew of, name-wise, in the film, he's a detective. He says, "I have a bomb and a Pakistani kid." So I'm sure you can appreciate where we'll have to go with this.
Okay, Jerry, hold up for a minute. We have 30 seconds left. We'll continue with the review.
You want to give us a quick rating?
And we'll see how many bagels or crumpets we have. Okay, stay tuned.
We'll do the rating. You'll do the rating when we come back.
Maybe.
Stay
tuned. ZRNTalk.com. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Hi there, Stan Weisselier here, and welcome back to The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com. Okay, we're back with Jerry and Jeff finishing up their review. Take it away, guys.
There was something there was a little monologue within the screenplay, which is given by the husband of Manur Balak, whose name is Miriam in the play, in the movie. His name is Farhan Tahir, another guy whose name you don't know, but he was wonderful. But when this is happening, they're accusing his son, and he tells his wife that he would rather be back in Pakistan and be amidst the filthy biryani. Now, this is biryani, I understand, is a dish. It's of rice. So it must be a commoner type of
it
dish.
It must be their national dish.
Yeah. And rather than endure this land in the free, because it's a very searing remark, very touching. He'd rather be there than here in the land of the free.
And how do you interpret that?
I interpret as what is happening here and his reaction to it. I could understand, being a Pakistani. He was also brought in, according to the screenplay, after 9/11. He was brought in because he was suspect. He was suspect because he was Pakistani. And he still harbors a great deal of emotion from being brought in then and now, especially when his son is accused of bombing. He's had it, and he wants to go back to Pakistan.
Well, he couldn't adjust.
It's adjusting. It's hatred, and we do have hatred. Well, we know what happens.
And it's the racism that he experienced from we Americans.
As a Muslim.
I
can see that, especially, you know, being from the, being not the majority was, and I think you could see that, you know, as a Jew being in a Christian land.
Yes.
That same type of persecution.
Another thing that this brought up, too, which was so interesting, is the bullying that is in the forefront of everyone's mind today, and where you see kids getting crazy and shooting in school because of, you know, what they've been facing. And the son of the blue-collar worker, the janitor, had been bullied quite a bit. And at one point he said, "I'm going to kill you." And so three of those boys who were bullying him were in the mall. So it brings that about. I mean, so it's really good for a very inexpensive film. They have a lot of meat in there.
But if I can jump into the fray here, when I hear things like this, it makes my blood boil. It really does. I think it's marvelous to say he would rather be back in Pakistani than here in the land of the free. We as a people in the United States are probably some of the most liberal, kindest people in the world. In the world. And I just find remarks like that to be very stereotypical.
Of racism.
I agree with that. But there is just as much racism out outside the United States, if not more so.
But
then
he's
there
the
is
one
here.
Being affected by it.
I understand.
So he has every right to say that.
I don't understand. I don't have a disagreement about his right to say it. I'm just saying that it's very stereotypical saying that we're the bad guys. We're not necessarily
no,
the bad guys.
And it doesn't say that we're the bad guys. We're coming from fear. We had 9/11.
Heck yes.
And we're coming from a place of we don't know. We have no idea. We're lost.
But to blame America for making him feel uncomfortable, he feels that he needs to go back to the destitution of Pakistan.
Yeah, but if you have a life, if he's destitute, but he has a life of freedom, he's not being looked down at by people. I can understand this. You're this complex that he's picked up here.
But you know what? We will have racism for thousands of
absolutely.
Years to come until it starts in the lower elementary school level and kids are taught that this is not the way.
Jeff was never confronted with racism. Never. When we started to see each other, Jeff was producing a telethon, the Chabad telethon.
The Chabad telethon.
Yeah.
And one day we went out to the street and there was a car that was passing by and the guys yelled out, "What, Jew bastards?"
And that was my family.
She makes light of everything. This dope. Stop it. And she was so taken back by this. How could she had never heard this?
I was absolutely shocked. And it pulled up so much anger inside of me because, you know, I never had come from a place like that, but it's there.
Well, guys, getting back to the movies.
Oh,
what movie?
What are we talking about? The movie?
Because the topic is racism.
So the movie, aside from anything else, brought a lot of thoughts of other type of
and it will
themes.
When you see it, and you will not. It's not oppressive at all. It is a very well done, low budget. You can see it's low budget. But I think that adds to the reality.
In other words, the film was grainy.
No.
It was shot on HD, I'm sure, and a lot of handheld.
Was handheld like a very jumpy type
no.
of thing?
No, not at all.
They don't have that anymore.
Not at all.
Handheld is very, very. It's not shaky at all. It's wonderful.
Yeah, they have the Steadicam.
And you know, it's only like, 73 minutes, Jerry? Something
80,
like
80 minutes.
It is a slow-moving film, in a sense.
How can it be slow-moving in 80 minutes?
I found for
to
me
Jeff,
it was.
It's slow. I found I was engrossed every single second. And never left the screen. I was very much impressed.
How long have you guys been married?
Too long.
It's ending as soon as we finish the show.
Quickly, how many bagels?
I liked it enough to give it 3.5.
3.5?
I'll give it 2.75.
2.75 crumpets.
Crumpets.
Yeah, and it's opening citywide or nationally this Friday?
No. It's more of an art film. It's not going to be in the commercial theaters, sadly. But I would urge everyone to see it.
Malcolm, what time do we have left?
30 seconds.
30 seconds. Real quick, a little anecdote about racism. I worked with these people when I was the actuary for a life insurance company many, many years ago. And we had a Cuban fella, and he would refer to the Puerto Ricans with the N-word. The Puerto Ricans referred to the Cuban guy with the N-word.
15 seconds.
When they spoke about each other. So much for racism.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Stan Weisleder. Welcome back to The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com. Here in the studio is Malcolm, Jerry, and Jeff, and our special guest today, Deborah Manning, who's going to talk about reinventing or jump-starting your life after a certain age instead of just sitting on the porch rotting away. Deborah, what do you have to say to us?
Thank you so much for being here. It's great to be back on the radio again. Malcolm and I have known each other for a long period of time, and at the time that I got started with my late husband, we did a financial radio program, and we talked finance and everything else. Yeah, and everything else in between, so it's great being back here, and this is a great crew. I can get to tell you. I lost my husband about 3.5 years ago. We were married for 33 years. It was quite unexpected, although I guess expected, complications from diabetes, one of the silent killers. And at the time that we knew that he was close to passing, he said, I'm a little worried about you. And I said, I'll be fine. He says, no. He says, I'm worried that what's going to happen is you're going to kind of sit back and you're going to let this whole situation, now that I'm passing, to really stop your life. And he reminded me, as we've talked before, that women do live longer than men. And he says, you have at least another good 30 years left. I don't mind saying my age. I'm 60 years old, very proud to be 60. And at the time, he said, you need to make sure that you have another 30 years, and those are good, fulfilling 30 years. And I was there when he passed, and very privileged to be there. During the next 3.5 years, actually 2.5 years, it was a very, very difficult time. I was rudderless. Of course, I had married my best friend, and we'd been together for 33 years. And I really didn't know quite how to restart. I went to religious leaders. I went to self-help groups. I went to all these various things, and I really couldn't find anything that really settled me on down. But one of the things I did remember that Tom had said is he said, you know, you need to look at each day as a brand new day. And as I have a saying, it's a great day to be alive and make the most of it. And he also made me promise. He said, you're pre-diabetic. I don't want you to pass the way I've passed. So I ended up, one day at a time, I lost over 100 pounds. And once again, all the experts say, at my age, there's no possible way you can lose that kind of weight because your metabolism, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's a bunch of baloney. It's baloney. You just have to make the decision, and I did. One meal at a time, one little bit of candy bar at a time.
How long did it take?
It took approximately, and I knew that I didn't want to lose it fast, but it took me about a year and a half to really do it. And all of a sudden, I started to feel better than I have ever felt in my entire life. I threw out all my fat clothes. I decided I was living with my brother at the time because, once again, I was going through this terrible phase of mourning. Suddenly I woke up and I realized I have a choice. I have a choice. Either I can go ahead and continue to die, and that's what I wanted to do, or I can remake my life. And what am I going to do? Well, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to get out of this bedroom, you know, that I've been sequestered in, and I'm going to get out into the sunshine. I'm going to start walking. I got my weight loss, and then I decided to move out, of all things. And when I made the announcement to my brother, he was, wait a minute, you can't be doing that. You're 60 years old. And I said, yes, I am 60 years old, and very proud to be 60 years old. And I moved out on him. He was rather shocked.
How old was he?
He's only 2 years younger than I am. But once again, he's getting ready for retirement and blah, blah, blah. Retirement is death. It truly is.
Stan? Absolutely. I have friends that have gone into actual, real retirement, like sitting on the back porch, and they have all become brain dead.
Absolutely. And that's what the doctor was very interesting, because I went back in for my physical, and the doctor didn't recognize me. And he looked at me, looked at the numbers, looked at the chart, and, of course, I was having blood work done every 3 to 4 months, and I was deficient in this vitamin and this vitamin. I realized the other thing, too, is that at 60 years old, I got to grow up, and I got to take supplements. I got to take vitamins. I've got to get some exercise. I've got to really start eating right. And the doctor looked at me and said, what did you do? And I said, I decided to live, to really live. And he said, you lost so much weight. And I said, well, isn't that what you wanted me to do? And he says, yeah, but nobody listens to their doctor.
Yeah, you did it.
How is that possible? I call it the best is yet to come. I feel better than I have felt in years. And I know that I've got a good 30 years left. And I asked the doctor at this point, as he looked at the blood work, he says, this is amazing. This is amazing. And he said, you're ready for the next 30. And it has to do with everything. It has to do with nutrition. It has to do with the emotional. It has to do with understanding and having a cognizance of the fact that you can make a difference in your life each and every day.
Well, you know, Deb, every doctor that I've spoken to about this, they all say, everyone, keep exercising and keep working. Don't retire. Do something. Don't want to do what you've been doing for the last 30, 40 years? Do do something else, but do something.
Actually, Stan, that's how I look at retirement. To me, retiring is stopping doing what you're doing and doing something else that's much more exciting for you at this point in your life. And Deborah, great for you. I love women. Women are so good about evolving and reinventing oneself. It's much easier for women than men, to be honest with you, from what I've seen. Good for you.
Thank you. Well, as I say, the best is yet to come, and we're looking to possibly put a program together, and it's for men and for women.
Well,
all
it
right.
should be.
Okay,
absolutely.
Guys, we're coming up in the break. Thank you very much, Deborah, but stick around. We have a few minutes at the end.
Okie doke. Thanks.
And stay tuned to
CRN.com, The View from Over Here. And if you want to talk to us,
CRN.
800-336-2225.
I think it's too late to talk to us, but we'll be back in a few minutes.
Well, we'll record their questions and play them back. Hi, Stan Weissleder here again at The View from Over Here. We are on CRNTalk.com. Before we end off the show, I just want to give you guys a little bit of a story that came to me when I was in junior high school. We had an English teacher who was very rough and tough, but one thing that she drilled into us, and I remember it to this day, and that's a long time ago, she said, every day of your life, for the rest of your life, always learn something new. Even if it is one small little itty bitty thing, you learn something.
Absolutely.
Whatever it is.
Absolutely.
And you have to do that for the rest of your life. And Malcolm, as we were talking during the break, when you stop doing that, you're dead.
Yeah. When you stop learning, it's when you vegetate. That's when, you know, death comes. My prime example is if, you know, I go on the beach and you see a sunrise. If you say, been there, done that, 1,000 times. Yeah, but each time it's a miracle.
It is.
Each time it's beautiful. Each time it awakens some other feelings in you. And you have to keep those feelings alive.
And you know what the proof of this is? Life expectancy is going through the roof almost.
Yes.
In fact, the insurance companies now have the mortality table ending at 120. So the assumption is at 120, everyone is dead, and we'll work it back from there. Okay? A couple of months ago, National Geographic magazine did an article on the same subject. Okay? A month ago, I was driving on Ventura Boulevard, and I saw this tremendous billboard, great big, on top of a building, and it said, of every three people that are alive today, two of them will reach age 100.
Well, it was funny, just not interrupt, but what was very, very funny was I was told you're age 60 and you're too old to be blah, 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 whatever it is, a new career. I'm now an art consultant. I represent Michael Fish Fisher, and he is an abstract artist, and he's in his 60s as well. Mm. So here it is, reinventing, redoing something, and yet, once again, taking one step at a time and getting out into the community, reaching out to those people. It's important, and
absolutely,
you've got to take the time and the energy to do it. Otherwise, you're gone.
That's it. Then you're gone. Not overnight, but it's a slow degradation.
Well, I tell you, you know, it's depressing. I've visited friends, parents who live in retirement homes, and there the whole mentality is to drive the tricycles, is to be old. There's no life there. It's sort of like a waiting ground to die.
It's a warehouse.
Yeah.
You know, I tell my girls, our girls, every single day, it's a choice. Everything you do in life is a choice. You don't have to be unhappy. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be overweight. You don't have to not like where you are. Make a different choice. That's what life is.
Yeah, but the life is, the choice is you have to listen to this show. On Tuesdays at 10 a.m. live.
It's been a great show.
And 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
This coming winter, I am going skiing.
There you go.
There
Bravo.
You go.
Yeah, I'm together with Jeff about 36 years, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And now you tell me I had a choice?
Now you still do, Jerry. I know a good attorney. If you're interested, let me know after the show.
All right, this is Stan Weisleder here with Malcolm Berman, Jerry and Jeff Cutler, and our special guest, Deborah Manning. We are on The View from Over Here at crn.talk.
No,
crntalk.com. Why are you confusing me, Malcolm?
You're never going to get that.
I'm easily confused.
Do we know what movies we're watching this week? Any previews?
Yes, The Counselor.
Counselor.
Oh, that looks like a good,
good
one.
Stuff, yeah.
Jerry will be doing that alone.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, guys. We'll be back next week.
We'll see y'all next
Thanks
week.
Thanks for tuning in.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of InfinityX and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.